Blog Talk Radio.
I love your new intro music. That is some toe tapping music there. I'm awake.
Yeah, I found that a few weeks ago and just fell in love with it. It's short enough to use for an intro, and just kind of sets a nice mood.
It does. It made me smile for sure.
Okay. Yeah, today our topic is going to be blood sacrifice and how it's practiced, either symbolically or in actuality, in world religious cultures. And, Elizabeth, would you like to start off just by telling us a little bit about, your path and your background?
Sure. I'm a reverend with the Triad Green Rose Church, which is a Wiccan church, founded by Lori Bruno out of Salem, Massachusetts. I'm very open to anyone's spiritual practice, anything that they feel they need to do or find. I'm more than happy to help them get there. I've been studying indigenous traditions for over 25 years, and indigenous spiritual culture, religious movements, actions, behaviors. I find it quite amazing, actually. And speaking of which, you know, there is something to be gained by this. Did you read the article where they just found the cure for Mercers in a medieval text?
No, I didn't.
It's true. It's amazing. Definitely I believe there's something to be learned. I definitely think that the indigenous spiritual traditions really got to the truth of the matter in a lot of things. A lot of modern traditions don't really understand, you know, spiritual traditions don't really understand or some of the practices that they continue to do hundreds and thousands of years later are considered barbaric to our modern culture and standards. Without a really good understanding, they pretty much are. I have to say, even though I understand something, there's a difference between understanding something, believing something, and accepting something. So while I understand a lot of different practices, and some of them I believe, but I don't necessarily accept them into my practice or how I do things. So I just want to make that really clear before we start, because, we're going to be discussing a very sensitive topic, which is blood sacrifice. You know, why did people do it? Why would one person kill another person or animal to please a god. That just really doesn't make sense to a lot of people. And pagan, Wiccan, or whatever, most people, you know, do not practice that. But a lot of people still do. Millions upon billions of people actually still practice this. If not in actuality, then they mimic a sacrifice.
Yes.
In their practice, so.
And I think coming up on Easter, as we are, we're getting into the Christian, you know, season of the death and resurrection of Jesus, mm-hmm. believed to have offered himself up as a sacrifice for forgiveness of sins. And in many different Christian churches, you know, we see this sacrifice played out in symbolic form, you know, using mm-hmm. the understanding of the Eucharist, you know, the mm-hmm. bread and the wine symbolically representing the body and blood of Jesus. And, you know, this is done in the Catholic Church every week on Sunday and several times during the week, during the daily Mass. And in many Protestant churches, you know, it's done at least once a week, or, well, not in all Protestant churches. Some will only do this maybe once a year or every 3 months. But it's still a practice that, you know, is done symbolically, you know, the whole idea of the sacrificial body and blood. So, you know, it's something that mainstream religion, you know, still utilizes.
Yeah. But so how the show started, how the theme started, was I contacted Ralph and I said, why not talk about blood sacrifice? It's like the one thing that sets everybody on edge, and, you know, everybody gets very upset about it. And you said, let's talk about it.
Yeah, blood sacrifice isn't something I myself am too comfortable with. I prefer to, you know, focus on other things. You know, I think back when you first contacted me a few days ago, I was thinking, okay, this is primitive, barbaric, and something I don't really want to get into. But after I examined my feelings about it, I thought, well, I'm reacting rather strongly to this, which usually means it's something we'd better talk about.
Yeah,
and
because a lot of people...
The more I thought about it, the more I realized this is something we do.
Yeah,
whether we realize it or not.
It really is. And, you know, there's different levels. You know, you have the symbolic sacrifice of the Eucharist and the wine. And then you have the action without knowing, you know, without understanding what you're doing, which is the holiday celebrations, the high holy days, which are often celebrated with a meat.
Yeah.
And then we also have different spiritual traditions who are very, very careful about how their foods for every meal, but particularly holiday meals, are prepared. You know, we have kosher kitchens. We have certain recipes and certain traditions that have to be followed exactly, and including the killing of the animal that is going to be served at dinner. And
right.
So we talked about it a little bit, and it used to really upset me as well. And when I went to Britain to study traditional witchcraft, I asked about it because, again, it upset me. So I really wanted to know how anybody could think it was okay to hurt another living being, and why. And there's a pretty long explanation for it. And it all has, I guess, starting with Christ, you know, the body and blood of Christ is considered sacred because Jesus' human form carried a DNA that was different. And why was it different? Well, because he had special gifts that most humans don't. So when we look at this and you know, the Christ line, you know, like the Da Vinci Code explains to a lot of people, the line, you know, Jesus Christ's bloodline is considered sacred, so sacred it's been hidden. And then we look at the different royal families throughout the world, and these families were formed because they all carried an ability that was more than your average person. Some people could, heal or had different qualities that were, I don't want to say superpowers, but they were different than regular people. And because those family lines, those genetic traits were passed down from generation to generation. So the blood of those families, they only married in their families to keep those genetic traits strong and to so that people would have this ability. Well, how would they have that ability with DNA in their blood? Well, it's how their brain is made, and they're able to activate their psychic centers in their brain to have a greater spiritual experience. So people can train themselves to have a greater spiritual experience through prayer, meditation. They get epiphanies. They get calm. They get knowing. They get the ability to heal and help people. And if that's not true, then faith healing is a lie. If you believe in faith healing, then you have to believe that people can do these things, and they can change their energy so that they have a closer connection to the all. And that's done through prayer and meditation. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, that's what I was getting ready to say, that I myself more or less operate out of a Buddhist mindset, a Buddhist path, where you don't have to have a particular bloodline in order to cultivate, you know, that spiritual experience. You know, anybody, a prince or a pauper, can put the time in on meditation and develop their spirituality and get to that point of being a great enlightened soul. But, you know, I can see where, you know, the focus on bloodlines can have its benefit too. If you believe you have a different genetic structure going on in the family bloodline, you would want to keep that bloodline fresh and pure. I know the Egyptian pharaohs operate with that same mindset, and I imagine a lot of other cultures have operated on that mindset.
Yeah, and so after, you know, we initially talked about this show, I went to my partner and I said, who is an atheist, okay, which cracks me up. So I'm a very spiritual person, but I love his logic. And so I sat down with him and I explained all this to him. And he said that that made more sense to him than anything that he had ever heard. And he said, well, what about virgins? Why do they sacrifice virgins? And, well, this is because and it's been scientifically proven that when a woman and a man have sex together, his DNA, whether she has a child with him or not, his DNA becomes part of herself and her DNA. I mean, it just becomes a part of her, so it's no longer a pure bloodline, per se. It has nothing to do with sexuality or sexual appeal. It has to do with the energy of the blood.
Yeah, the energy.
And so then, I'm sorry.
We have an echo going on here. Yeah, continue.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Well, you know, we have to tell everyone, I'm in Amsterdam, so we had to use Skype for this call, and sometimes Skype isn't that great and it echoes, but
it's coming
better?
Remarkably clear. Yes. I'm pleasantly surprised for the most part.
It's amazing progress, technology. I love Skype. I get to talk to my kids with Skype. So anyway, so we have virgins and we have DNA and we have, we have stories from the Bible about, God requesting and requiring the sacrifice and, specific animals and things like that. And we also have what most Americans are familiar with is, Native American practices of honoring, when you hunt, you honor the animal that you kill. Things are prepared a certain way. It has to do with living in conjunction with the energy of the land. So when you kill an animal, or a plant for that matter, because they both have life forces, you are taking the energy of the animal into you, into your body, or the plants into your body. And you are, if you use that plant or animal as a sacrifice, you are asking for the aid of that animal or that plant, their energy, to help you in your prayers. So the same thing with the body and blood of Christ. You're asking Christ to help you with your prayers. And so when we have certain holiday dinners, like Thanksgiving or Easter, for me, it's always a turkey for Thanksgiving and it's always a lamb for Easter. And I didn't quite understand that for a long time. It was just something that you did. And when we think about lambs, and it being, lamb and Easter being particularly Christian, we think about Christ and the reference to the lamb and the people who follow Christ, him being the shepherd. And so when we do that, we are taking in the energy of the lamb to follow Christ's teachings.
Mm-hmm.
So when people hear the phrase blood sacrifice, what they see in their minds is this horrible picture of some voodoo dude all painted up in some deep, dark basement or deep in the woods, going in and out of a trance and holding a chicken up and screaming and yelling all these words and then cutting it open and blood spewing everywhere. And that's not, while that does happen, that's not the meaning of the ceremony or the ritual. We don't understand what they're doing or what they're saying. So to us, it seems very barbaric. We don't understand what it's about. So to us, it seems horrible. And that poor chicken, oh my gosh, how horrifying it must be for that chicken. Except that if you've never been to a chicken processing plant, you don't understand that it's 10 times worse at a processing plant than it is in that ritual for that chicken.
And that's one way we practice blood sacrifice today, is in our meat processing plants.
Exactly, but it's not done in an honorable way at all. It's not done in a way that honors that plant. They're dying, or that animal, they're dying terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Terrified.
Yeah, it's all done backwards.
Yeah, it's all done. It's done in a horrible way. And so we're taking that energy into us when we eat these processed, you know, these animals that have been processed this way. Killing an animal kosher, doing it in a religious ceremony, I believe does make a difference. I mean, I've seen people who do this, and I've seen people who don't. And you can tell energetically that there is a difference. There are sick people in the world and people who do sick things for no real purpose or reason and who like to see animals suffer. And that has nothing to do with the spiritual aspect of sacrifice, the blood sacrifice.
Yes. Now, Elizabeth, we have a caller on the line, so can you hold that thought?
Sure.
And I'm going to go ahead and get this caller.
Okay.
Hello, caller, you're on the air. Did you have a question? Hello, you're live on the air. Well, we seem to have lost our caller, so...
Do you have your mute button off for them?
Yeah, they're live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, we can continue on.
Yeah, if they want to start talking, they can.
I have a feeling the call dropped.
Oh, it happens.
Oh, it does. So, it does.
Well, I hope they call back because this is a very interesting topic. And, like we said at the beginning, this really upsets a lot of people. This is one of those topics that you're going to get people who, some people are really cool with it, and then other people get very puffy-chested, and how dare you say it's okay in any kind of way. At no point have I said it's okay. At the beginning, I said there is a difference between understanding, believing, and accepting something. I understand this. I believe that it works this way, but I don't accept it as part of my practice.
Right.
Being aware of how this works is fine. I can be aware of how a clock or how a watch works, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to go build watches every day. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah, that's just not your thing. And it's
right.
The same thing with any religious practice. You know, we're part of the temple of the infinite universe. We try to understand a wide variety of different spiritual practices, but that doesn't mean I'm a practicing hoodooist, voodooist, going to go out into the yard and sacrifice a chicken. However, you know, up until a while ago, I did eat meat without giving it a second thought. And as you were saying in your previous comments, you know, the meat that we eat that's a part of our food chain is just sacrificed in a very barbaric way. I mean, it's not even done with the attitude of sacrifice. It's just slaughtering animals en masse and then preparing that food for mass consumption. And this whole topic of blood sacrifice has made me rethink, okay, what is my attitude about processed foods and especially processed meat? You know, previously I never gave it a thought, but, you know, now I know I need to be more mindful, more aware of that, and, you know, make sure that when I buy meat for family consumption that, you know, it comes from a kosher source where the animals are not, you know, tortured or sacrificed in an inhumane way. I won't even use the word sacrifice for that because it's just a slaughter. Just a slaughter. And for me personally now, I prepare food for, you know, my father who is, I think, rather old and probably too old to be weaned away from a meat diet. But for me, you know, I'm rethinking the whole idea of becoming vegan or at least a vegetarian, just to be mindful of that energy, you know, that previously I've been putting into my body unaware.
Well, and that's a good idea. I mean, I think everyone should try that for what, if their health allows. You know, it's good to, but, you know, also it's good to be vegan, but plants have a life force as well.
Right.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that, you know, things can't be done respectfully. You know, it is a circle of life, you know, but things can be done more respectfully, I think, in awareness of our world around us. You know, when we have all kinds of things around us, things, you know, that we don't think of. We live in a disposable society. We don't think about these things. We don't think about how that food gets there. All we think about is how much of a pain in the butt it is to go shopping. You know, and also, you know, I would strongly urge anyone who could do this is to, you know, continue with your meats and vegetables, but in a mindful way. But cut out your processed foods. Now, part of the tradition, Native American living traditionally, is being very mindful of your food. And when you eat, and not just in the preparation, but while you're eating, you eat quietly usually because you are making a conscious effort to absorb the energy of the food that you're eating. And with mindfulness, gratitude, and consideration. And so when you finish your meal, if you are traditional Native American, when you finish your meal, you do not clear your plate. You do not make sure everything's eaten off your plate. You leave a bite of every single thing that was on your plate. You still leave a bite of it on your plate. And you take that plate outside. It's called a spirit plate.
Okay.
And that is meant to, and you give that to, you just put it outside in a sacred space, you know, kind of far away from your house. And in the morning, usually everything's gone that was on your plate. And it goes back into the environment. You know, little animals come and eat the food, and they get used to your scent, so they're not afraid to come closer to you or your home. And it's actually quite logical because it makes it easier for you to hunt them later when you need to eat meat. So the thing is that it, by consciously being aware of what we are eating and putting into our bodies and understanding that we are just a part of a cycle. We are not the beginning and the end. We are just part of a cycle. And being very aware and conscious of the energy that we take into our bodies, the energies of the plants and animals around us. And when we pray before our meal, giving grace and thanks, you know, a lot of traditions do this differently. Some traditions thank God, some thank Jesus, and some thank the plants and animals that died for them. So it's an interesting way to look at it. Now, there are some very macabre practices considering sacrifice, blood sacrifice and things like that. And then there are some very beautiful ones. But they're all designed to propel an intention forward.
Yes, kind of put that energy out into the universe.
Right.
And, yeah, letting it come back to you in some way. And, you know, what you said about preparation of the spirit plate, now that's something that has been practiced on the European side of my family, which I did not know where it came from. And I don't think my family members that practice it really know where it came from either. But
it is not just Native American. It's an indigenous spiritual practice all over the world.
Right.
It's not Native American, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's something where they would leave a little portion of what's on their plate, and then, of course,
right.
in the family practice, they just throw it in the trash. But, you know, I like that idea of putting it out in nature and giving, as it were, a libation, you know, back
right.
to the plants and the animals and continuing on that whole cycle of nature.
Yeah. I remember I was at a diner once with a very old Native American man named Timmy, and we had been working on a project, and we had stopped for lunch, or breakfast, I'm sorry, and I had gotten a big plate of pancakes, sausage, whatever, and I left, you know, a little bit of everything on my plate, and one of his friends came over, not Native American, and I was about 30 pounds lighter than I am now. And he started joking and teasing me, saying, I guess that was too big of a breakfast for you. And my friend Tony, who was about 70 years old at the time, I was like maybe 28, he stands up and looks this guy in the eye. And he said, no, she knows how to eat in a polite, considerate, and honorable way.
Uh-huh.
And he just stood there and stared at the guy for a minute, and then he sat back down. And, you know, he finished eating. I was done. And so, but because a lot of people don't understand these ways, you know, the American tradition is eat everything on your plate. It is. Everybody's,
yeah.
If you don't eat everything on your plate, then it's supposed to be an insult to the cook that you didn't find it appetizing. But in most traditions, you leave a little something on your plate. That is your sacrifice, because it's good. You want to eat it all. I know I do, because now I'm 30 pounds heavier. but it also shows a little self-sacrifice, that you're aware enough to say stop. The rest is for this, and it improves your ability to think outside of yourself and practice mindfulness. So how do we get from blood sacrifice to practicing mindfulness? Wow.
You know, we did it in a few nice steps.
I think so.
But that whole idea of sacrifice, yes, of thinking of other beings other than yourself. And, you know, we're living beings. We need to ingest food in some form. And in order to do that, some living beings have to be ingested into our body, be they, you know, animal or plants or even a cup of water. You know, I don't know how many living beings I killed boiling water for coffee this morning. You know, there's
just
microscopic, but, you know, being an animal, a human being, you know, we have to have physical nourishment, and doing that mindfully, you know, aware
uh-huh.
that other beings are contributing to our well-being. You know, I think that involves a certain level of sacrifice in and of itself.
Yeah, and, you know, you've heard me say this expression before, of the land and of the blood. And
uh-huh.
that's a term used in indigenous spiritual traditions. And it's often used to describe what teachings, you know, who will receive teachings of that tradition. And again, we talk about the genetic traits and the DNA and the mind's ability, the brain's ability to understand the teaching. You know, because even now science is saying, you know, we remember our grandparents' memories. We remember things that our grandparents did. You know, if you have an affinity for liking to fly, maybe your grandfather was a pilot or, you know, just different things like that. Or if you like climbing rocks, maybe your grandmother climbed rocks. We carry these feelings, these energies, these, I don't want to say actual experiences, but inclinations. We carry these inclinations in our DNA that we are more predisposed to some things than other things. And so, again, I'm just trying to reemphasize that, you know, you can be born a concert pianist, or you can study for years to be a concert pianist. You're going to end up a concert pianist. It's the amount of effort that it takes, depends on your genetic predisposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, either your genetic or... You know, if you're a believer in past lives, then, you know, there's that metaphysical component there, too. So you got,
that's
strong
another shifted past life thing.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
About that, too. Shocking.
But, yeah, you've got a physical and a metaphysical component going there. And when we learn to recognize this, that, you know, most of us think that our life is just all about us, you know, all about what I want and what I need. And, you know, there's a much wider universe or multiverse, you know, in action all around us. And when we're aware of that, then we also become aware that, you know, there are other beings whose lives are intertwined with us.
Right.
And when we go out shopping to the grocery store, it's not just buying the cheapest food for the cheapest price and getting the best value. You know, I think we also need to be aware, okay, how can I practice sacrifice by making sure that my shopping dollars, you know, support companies and corporations that, you know, are worthy. That practice, you know, good stewardship of the earth and good relationships with their employees and the environment. And it's a lot more than just being stuck in our own little world. It's, you know, we are connected to a far wider universe. And when we're aware of that, you know, we really have to question a lot of our previous assumptions and begin to act more in harmony with the world around us.
Right.
Did I steer us down a dead-end road there?
No, I was just thinking. You made me think. Stop it. I was just thinking that, you know, people's preconceived notions, you know, when they hear a certain word or a certain turn of phrase or an idea, we've been so conditioned to think it's horrible. I tell people I'm a practicing witch proper, and they think I'm going to go all Harry Potter on them. And that's not it at all. You know, it's a matter of that the term to me, and from what I understand, is that I live in a conscious state where I see how everything is connected and I work with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it means to me. But so when we talk about things like the word witch or blood sacrifice, we have to be aware of how other people, even though we've come to understanding how we look at it, that other people have not. So if you want to, you know, to upset people, you can use pretty much any phrase that you know that we have been culturally sensitized to, and not to get on a political thing or anything like that, but when you talk about the word liberal and the word conservative, they've both been demonized as and feminism, that's been demonized as these horrible words, when in actuality all of those words are about logic, balance, and equanimity. But because society is, you know, the media and society and has conditioned us to think those words are bad and people who use those identities are bad, then we have we forget the meaning. And so when we have words and phrases like blood sacrifice or you know, we immediately envision this horrible thing going on. When in actuality, it's something that you yourself practice every day without knowledge or consent. Can you imagine going through life being aware, being fully aware of your actions and how they affect everything around you, and making a conscious decision about participating in that energy or not?
Yeah. Now, that would be a wake-up call. For a great many of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I had a brother-in-law that worked at a meat processing plant, several years ago, and he came out of that after a couple of days, quit the job, and never ate bologna again because he knew what went into it.
Right,
and
exactly.
He lost his appetite.
Yeah. Awareness. It's a bitter pill.
but really, if we think how this, you know, what might be called blood sacrifice done in a dishonorable way is happening all around us, then when we see cultures that practice sacrifice, be it blood sacrifice or the sacrificial harvesting of grains and plants and, you know, collection of nuts and berries. You know, when my wife got on to study of Wicca, and she started telling me that before I clipped flowers, I had to ask permission from the rose bush before I clipped the flower, I have to admit, I thought she was a little nuts. Because I had not yet made that connection between the fact that I'm a living being and that the rose bush is a living being and that we have to live in cooperation with one another. And to me, at that time, I was just seeing the rose bush as an object, you know, just something that I could own, that I could do with as I please, and not a very awakened mindset at all. But, you know,
that's the thing too, is that with Wicca and indigenous traditions, you're supposed to offer something back of yours when you take a clipping or plant a plant or whatever. And it's usually a fingernail, a hair follicle, you can even, you know, a strand of hair. You can even spit in the ground, you know, when you're doing it. And I thought about this, and I'm kind of skeptical, believe it or not. So I thought about this, and I decided to investigate this a little further in learning about plants. I learned about landscaping. And what I learned is that there are grubs in the ground that are vegetarians and do not eat protein. But if you stick a piece of fingernail or a bit of your hair in the ground when you're planting, they won't eat the roots of the plant. If you leave a strand of your hair or fingernail on the ground or on the plant, you know, when you take a bit of the plant off of it, what happens is a bird comes down and starts pecking at the ground around the plant, thereby aerating the soil and making it a healthier plant. And so little fairies don't make it better. They're not gifts for the fairies. They're gifts. They are an honorable exchange to keep both you and the plant and the bird all healthy. And it seems like a wacky practice until you understand that it's actually good farming.
And we read about, and I know on the internet a few days ago, I read where Nestle's corporation is busy pumping the groundwater of California just into oblivion. And now they've made a heck of a deal with British Columbia, where they can pump out their groundwater at, I think it's $2 for so many millions of gallons, and just bottle it and sell it as if it were a commodity.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know, it's just taking. Taking without giving and expecting to sell it so that the CEO, the board of directors can just make a killing, can make a boatload of money, and they're not questioning what happens when these resources literally run dry. We bleed the West Coast out of older groundwater so we can be shipping it around the world for, you know, profits, profits, profits. You know, what do we do? What kind of a world have we created in ignorance just through those barbaric practices of taking without giving anything back?
Exactly.
And that's her, yeah, sacrifice just beautifully illustrates that, I believe. You know, the
I
need
think so.
To give.
I think so, too. I can't tell you how happy I am to be in Amsterdam. With all this stuff
you
going on. You're
more civilized there.
It is so, it's so different. You know, we're in America, we're so culturally programmed to be consumers and to not regard any of this going on. And that it's just normal everyday stuff, and forgetting the whole practice and of return and honor. And so what's happening is that, you know, anybody who wants to make a dime can make it, but at the sacrifice of millions of people, and not just people. The land, there is no honor of the exchange. The land's going to dry up and become arid. It's going to die because we're not giving life back to it.
Yeah, and there's going to be consequences to pay. I mean, just not even long-term down the line, short-term down the line, about another year, mm-hmm. and the situation in California will be catastrophic. And how do we address it? I don't think anybody in very high office has made any plans for addressing this yet. And that
nobody's going to do anything because everybody's making a dollar.
That's
what matters to them. They have all the money in the world, but have no idea what value really is.
Yeah.
They understand the value of things. They understand the cost of things, but not the value of things.
And when we practice any form of sacrifice, you know, we learn to see the value in things. And that's what I think is very
exactly.
beautiful. Because if we continue on this path of just mindlessly monetizing the planet and cashing it in for greenbacks, which will one day be worthless, you know, we're not going to have just another economic collapse like we did a few years ago. We will have an
right.
economic collapse, an environmental collapse, and a societal collapse. And we can avoid it just by
right.
getting back to a more civilized mindset. You know, recognizing that we have to give back to society, to the planet, to Mother Nature, to everything around us. And it's not just me and my own little world. This is, you know, we're all in this together, quite literally.
Quite literally, yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm.
It's a crazy world out there, and I think that somebody cutting a chicken's head off in the middle of the woods is the least of our worries. The bigger worries are those big meat processing plants where, you know, these horrible
right.
things occur. And
I never really realized this until, this is going to sound odd, but I worked at a chicken processing plant for 7 years, and it never bothered me because all I saw was frozen chicken.
Right.
And, I mean, it wasn't a kill plant. It was a processing plant where we thaw out the meat and then run it down a disassembly line, cut out the bone, and then pack it for further processing, ship it out. And it wasn't really until one of my supervisors began to point out bruises on the meat and the broken bones that we had trouble cutting around because the chickens had been abused. And
right.
he made a comment that, you know, they probably chased these poor devils, you know, all around the plant before they killed it. And
right.
He was concerned because it made for a poor quality meat. You know, I began
right.
to think about that and thought, what the hell am I contributing to?
Right.
And it's, for me, it's been a slow, gradual awakening that
mm-hmm.
The forms of sacrifice or barbaric processing of meats, processing of our foods in a barbaric manner, really could be alleviated, I mean, a lot, if we just paid attention to the fact that we need to be giving back. We need to be offering up some sort of sacrifice to show our unity with nature and with our fellow beings, plants, animals, and minerals, and just treat the universe around us with respect. And if we continually just think of the universe as being a commodity that we can package
right.
and sell, you know, we're not going to get there. And we have to break through that brainwashing.
Right. I have something to tell you. Are
okay.
you ready?
Okay. I am ready.
So what got me thinking about this was, as you know, I was just there in the States for my grandson's birth. And there's a thing going on now where, I guess the last 10 to 20 years, more women are ingesting their placenta after they give birth.
Mm-hmm.
They're
yeah.
opting for
yeah.
that. A lot of people are doing it. And, you know, almost all animals, mammals, when they give birth, they do that. They eat the placenta, and the mothers do. And, you know, science has told us, well, they do that because, you know, to stop predators. And that's part of the reason. But what I observed was my daughter, who had horrific postpartum depression with her first child, and exhaustion,
mm-hmm.
and just did not have those issues after she capsulized the placenta. She didn't have those issues. So, you know, I still think it's gross, personally. It's gross. To me, it's gross. But I see the logic in it now. And I see that that's one of those things that we as humans stopped doing that was actually good for us, that we didn't do. And so she did it in a mindful way, and she did it in a sacred way. She was honoring herself. And, you know, you would think that me, the mom who's the hippie, would have would have been more encouraging about that, or at least suggested it. But it was my Christian daughter who did this. And this time with her second child, it was so much better with her. So when there are some people who, after they have a baby, they hang their placenta from a tree or bury it under a tree or whatever. To me, my daughter doing what she did in such a sacred and honorable way, and doing what her body was urging her to do, instead of taking all these medications and being drugged out from the medications the doctor gave her, took her own body's medicine and fixed herself. And I have to wonder how many other things that we no longer do that other animals do that would help us in so many other ways, physically, mentally, spiritually. Native American teachings say, watch, if you want to know what to do, watch the animals.
Right.
And I think that we don't consider the wisdom around us and what the world, the natural world, has to teach us. Combine
yeah,
that with did that, we would just be, we would evolve immensely, I think.
Yeah, I think so. No matter what we call ourselves, you know, we all have our prejudices. And, you know, we all have our blind spots, you know, whether we're Christian or Wiccan or Buddhist or, you know, whatever, atheist. You know, we all have our blind spots, and we need, when we learn to address these things and see our blindness, it may sound like a contradiction, but when we see our blindness, we can begin to do something about it. And I think that's the beauty of having discussions like this, because I think I, as I confessed earlier, when you first suggested this topic, I thought, well, no, I do not want to go there.
Right.
But then I had to examine, why don't I want to go there? And am I being a hypocrite about things? And after thinking about it, you know, the way in which we do blood sacrifice blindly, unawares, without realizing it's going on, now, this is something that we need to be aware of.
Right.
And,
knowing this now doesn't make you want to go out and cut off a chicken's head, right? It's just
Yeah,
I think people think that if they find out what something is, that means that they have to do it. And that's, again, the third time in the show, there's a difference between understanding, believing, and accepting something.
Yeah. And, understanding it. And I think that's, you know, one of our main purposes here in Temple of the Infinite Universe is try to understand, you know, the perspective of others and, you know, encourage, you know, a cultural give and take and, you know, sharing where we can get dialogue going and just shed a lot of our prejudice and stereotypes like now, we've been doing a study of bloodless voodoo, and I never thought, you know, growing up that I'd be corresponding with people who practice voodoo. But, you know, there's a lot of positive things we can learn one from another. And if we learn to just go there without reservation, just go there hoping to grow from the experience. You know, we can grow quite a bit and come to understand quite a lot.
Yeah, voodoo is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a practitioner, and I don't pretend to understand it, but I do believe that it's an important practice and what it teaches.
Uh-huh.
I don't practice it, but I think it's pretty amazing. You should get someone on here to talk about voodoo.
Oh, well, I think we're going to have to wrap up this segment fairly fast, Elizabeth. 90 seconds. Do you have any closing thoughts before we go off the air?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Well, in further broadcasts, you know, I'm sure I'm going to be talking with Elizabeth again. And also, I've been contacted by Dick Larson, who wants to come on the show talking about his understanding of Buddha Maitreya. And then I'm also looking to finalize an interview with a lady on has her own yoga studio in British Columbia, Canada. So hopefully the next few weeks now we're going to be coming up with a wide variety of topics and all focused on bridging the gaps of, you know, inter-religious barriers and overcoming those barriers, just coming to a broader understanding of, you know, who we are as people that see ourselves most of the times as being separate, but also as one common human family. And Writer Ralph signing off. Thank you, Elizabeth, for being my guest this morning.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Okay. And we will be in touch later. Again, many blessings, and thank you tremendously.